homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So thank you all for coming to sit with us today. I'd like to, before I start, thank Reverend Master Chiyu for my being here, and thank Reverend Master Mayon for inviting me to sit here this morning with you. And I would like to dedicate this small offering of Dharma to Reverend Master Phoebe in gratitude for her compassion and bright teaching and her kindness to me. I'm going to read a little poem to you. You may not have come across this in any Buddhist text. I think the teaching is quite Buddhist, and we're going to talk about it a little. And it was given to me by a very dear monk a number of years ago. And when I read it, I thought, well, it speaks to my heart, and I don't understand it at all. But I kept it, and periodically I come across it and read it, and over the years it has kind of grown in my heart. And recently I thought, aha, I think I understand something about it. It's very, very short. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And for those of you that are readers of Leonard Cohen, you'll recognize that. A few weeks ago, Reverend Master Seikai talked about being willing to accept joy in the face of adversity. And I thought, huh, there's a connection here. There's a connection between this poem and joy. And so what I'd like to talk about today is finding joy. Because for me, the joy is in the Dharma. That's part of what it's all about. And for me, the light is the light of the Dharma. So what I'd like to look into is, how do we let that light in? How do we let the light of the Dharma in? It's all over, it's all around us, but sometimes we find ourselves in darkness and we don't see it. I have found it very helpful to realize that the light of the Dharma is everywhere. And I carried that thought around for a long time. And I also have realized that at the same time that the Dharma is everywhere, it's nowhere except within us. We see and we touch and we feel that light of the Dharma when we sincerely practice, which is what you've all been doing this morning. And what you've all been doing earlier this morning, yesterday, and hopefully when you go home, or on the road. We practice meditation. We practice the precepts. We practice trying to understand the Four Noble Truths. And we practice walking the Eightfold Path. Although sometimes I have to say I feel more like I'm stumbling than walking. But I keep trying. And all the things, these are all the things you already know, if you've been coming here at all. So this is nothing new to you. It's the same thing. It's old stuff. But the newness in Buddhist practice for me is what happens every day when I'm willing to let go of my opinions and my preconceived notions and my complaints, which I'm very good at, and my grumbling, which I'm also very good at. And I'm willing to just say, what can I do today? That's when the light comes in. That willingness is what allows the light to come in. I think that the light has many names, and joy is one of them. So that's what I'd like to talk about today, is about finding joy and what we might do in our everyday life, how we might more often see that light and how we might often experience that joy that's coming in through the crack, because it also occurred to me, my humble opinion, for me, that the crack is the crack of our imperfections. And it's the imperfections that we have that actually allow the light to come in. And I'm going to talk about imperfections a little later and shortcomings, but I don't want you to feel bad if some of you don't have any. Because I have enough to share, and I'm going to share some of mine with you later. So you can stay and listen, even if you've reached that state of perfection where you have no shortcomings. You're all welcome. We all know that the basic teaching of Buddhism is that suffering exists. That's a very basic teaching. And for many of us, I think that's what brings us to practice. Not the realization that it exists, but just feeling miserable, just lacking something, feeling that there is something more that we could be doing. I knew that suffering existed when I lived in the world, before I became a monk, but I always thought that it was caused by outside things. And if the situation was different, or my coworkers were more kind, or people understood how wonderful a person I was, that I wouldn't have any suffering. And because of that, I always looked for the solutions outside of myself. And finally, with a little help from my friends, and coming to the Abbey, having some teaching by some of the monks here, I realized that, well, yes, I had it right that suffering existed, and I was looking in the wrong direction. And you know, it's, what is it, the Sando Kai? If your first step is false, you will immediately stumble. Well, I've been stumbling for a long time. And when it finally got to me that you have to look inside yourself, you have to stop trying to be more perfect, and you have to stop the non-acceptance that this kind of quivering bundle of karma was something that I actually owned and I needed to take responsibility for. That was a big change for me. I'm still working on it. I've been here 20 years, practiced for a few years before I came. So it's not easy, and yet it's fairly simple. And it seems to me that it's because it is our very own shortcomings that cause us suffering, that also gives us a great deal of joy and hope, because we're the ones that can do something about that. And this is where acceptance comes in. And acceptance is big. Accepting our shortcomings. And I have learned over the years to look at all of my shortcomings, my imperfections, as bodhisattvas. You know, there's the bodhisattva of anger, and there's the bodhisattva of impatience, and there's the bodhisattva of resentment. There's the bodhisattva of criticism. But if that word doesn't work for you, you can just think of your shortcomings as friends. These are friends that you can take by the hand and let them teach you. This is how we learn. And as I said, for those of you that don't have any bodhisattva friends because you don't have any shortcomings, I'm going to share mine with you. So I made up a list. And what did I come up with? Well, I've known for a very long time that anger and judgmentalism and criticism were pretty much at the top of the list. They were right up there. And I think I'm making a little progress in converting them. They're still there. I think they come with super glue, but who am I to say? But recently, some others made their appearance known. And this was very distressing to me. Resentment. And that probably wasn't new to me, but my looking at it was new, and my realizing it was new. And then, I thought, there's all this jealousy. I'm not supposed to be jealous. I'm a monk. What am I jealous of? And besides, it was very unexpected. I thought it had passed on 30 years ago when I divorced my spouse. But here it was. Here it was, this big ball of jealousy. It was a very prickly ball. And I'm still working with it. And I won't bore you with my other ones because it's a very long list, I'm sorry to say. But as I sit with each of these, and that's what I mean when I say taking them by the hand, we have to be willing to offer compassion and acceptance to our own selves, whatever state we find ourselves in, for all of our imperfections and shortcomings, for all the mistakes we make, for all the times that we say, oh good Lord, how can I possibly have done that again? That's when we sit still with them and look at them with the mind and heart of, what may I learn here? What is this teaching me? And whenever we start to do that, no matter how little attention we paid to them in the past, we begin at some point to recognize the consequences. You know, this is not just a shortcoming. This is not just an unfortunate characteristic that I carry around, this critical mind and this judging. It has consequences. And the very sad part is that not only does it have consequences for me, it has consequences for other people. So if we are in this practice to train for self and others, we have to be aware of the consequences. And again, it's the consequences, it's the hard bits, it's the uncomfortable bits that allow us to see the light. Because if we were comfortable and happy, we wouldn't see the consequences. And we wouldn't be able to clean up the karma that is at the root of all of our shortcomings and all of our perfections. So recognizing the niggles of discontent, at least that's how it comes up for me, of who we are and how we do things and how we live our daily lives. Because it's our daily life that provides the opportunity to really see what we need to do. So here we are with all of these imperfections, all of these consequences for self and others. How in the world do we find joy in this discontent? Well, joy is a deliberate act of willingness. It's not something random that floats by. It's not whimsical. It's not something that just happens. And it's not something out there that we can find the way that we look for our lost flashlight or our lost key. It's something right in here, inside of ourselves. I think that I now think of joy as an attitude of mind with a little faith and trust as a grounding point. The faith that comes in is faith in something greater than ourselves, and greater than what we see from our limited perspective. Faith in our own Buddha nature, and trusting the Buddha nature within ourselves. It's always been a hard thing for me to do, because I was one of us, I think there's more than me, that thought, I know the Buddha nature resides in everything, and it's in you and him and her, but it's not quite here yet in me. But I have come to realize that if one is going to practice, we have to be willing to make that leap and trust that we have as much Buddha nature as anyone else. It's an equal distribution. And that we can focus on our shortcomings in a very negative way, which ends up in despair and depression and apathy, comparing ourselves to others, or we can accept all of our shortcomings, we can embrace them, and we can vow to learn from them. We can vow, well, I'll do a little bit better. I haven't gotten all the way through this yet. This bit of karma isn't totally converted, and I'm going to work on it. Whatever it takes, I'm going to work on it. And when we do that, when we make that commitment to ourselves, we move into the light of the Dharma. And that's part of finding joy. Ring the bells that still can ring. We all have something to offer right now, regardless of what state we find ourselves in. You know, we don't have to be enlightened to act like Buddhas. I was so intrigued when I was over at Throssell in 2007 and 2008, and I came across a bumper sticker that said, practice random acts of kindness. And then in the planner that I purchased while I was there, and later on during the year, there's a whole week that they set aside for random acts of kindness. And it's not even a Buddhist country. And I thought, well, if they can do it for a week, I could certainly do it for a day, right? And so what I started doing was trying to do one good deed a day. Now that, you know, may sound kind of hokey, but it worked for me because it put my focus back on my practice and what needed to be done. So random acts of kindness. A good deed a day, someone you could say thank you to, someone you could offer a smile to. Joy isn't about getting something. You know, we live in such a consumer society, but joy isn't about getting, it's about giving. There's a lovely book called The Monks of Newskate, or The Monks of Newskate, I'm not sure the pronunciation. It's a community of Eastern Orthodox monks and nuns in Cambridge, New York, which is a rural upstate community. I've had it for a number of years. And one of the things they talk about in there as part of their monastic practice is giving ourselves away. And I thought that was such a wonderful way to look at it. There are wonderful Jataka tales where the Buddha talks about giving parts of his body away, giving himself away, giving his wife and children away, you know, as he was in previous lives. And I thought, well, that's interesting. How would we give ourselves away? And I think what we give is our practice. And we don't realize that that's when we practice Buddhism in a very sincere and very determined way, it's a gift to everybody we come in contact with and to people we don't even come in contact with. Joy for me isn't a feeling of ecstatic happiness. It's a bit quieter. It's more deep-seated. And while I was pondering this, I came across this nice quote from Bertrand Russell. A happy life must be to a great extent a quiet life, for it is only in an atmosphere of quiet that true joy can live. I think an atmosphere of quiet could also be called a mindful life, because quietness is interior, isn't it? I moved to Berkeley a year ago. I live in a very urban area. There's BART, there's fire engines. You think the freeway is noisy here. You know, there are all these people down there. But it's interesting, because when you walk around, you see the Dharma. You see people practicing the Dharma. You see people being kind and being generous, and you see people in the unfortunate circumstance of being angry and unhappy. And I realized that more, I think I realized it a lot living in an urban area, that quietness is interior. You know? The meditation hall is the temple of our heart, so that to lead a mindful and quiet life is something that goes on inside of us, regardless of what kind of crazy world we're in. You know, everybody else is, going a little berserk, and we don't have to do that. We don't have to follow that. So for me, a contemplative life is a mindful life, and I think, I'm convinced, that you do not need to live in a monastery to live a life of contemplation and mindfulness. It helps, it's conducive, but you don't have to do that. You don't have to be a monk to lead a contemplative and mindful life. You just walk around, be open to letting the light come in, and the universe will benevolently present us with innumerable opportunities for letting go of our little selves and simply doing the work of a Buddha. And doing the work of a Buddha is joyful. How could it not be? Charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. How can we practice any of those without bringing joy to ourselves and bringing joy to others? There's a crack in everything. Whoops, I've missed a sentence. I'm going to go back. The first sentence was, ring the bells that still can ring. And the second one was, forget your perfect offering. Well, I've been trying for a long time to eliminate should from my vocabulary, because it almost always gets me in trouble. And I thought, well, I know enough from my previous life before becoming a monk and working with people and change, that if you want to change something, you want to eliminate something, you substitute something for it. So what could I substitute from the, I should do this and I should do that? I could substitute, how can I help? What may I do here? Is there something I can help with? And when we give up our idea of what an offering is, that's when the opportunities and possibilities present themselves. And when we look at today and we see our daily life as a ceremony, the ceremony of daily life, we've heard that from Reverend Master Chu. Ceremony of daily life. We can look at our life as multiple moments for making the Buddha's truth one with ourselves. That's the closing of the lecture verse. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. We can't do that outside of ourselves. We can only do it inside. There's a crack in everything. Out of the four lines, I'm not sure I have a favorite, but that's always said something to me. And what it says to me now is when we stop looking for perfection in ourselves and others, we stand a chance of finding true perfection. It's a lovely, short, brief article by Reverend Master Daishin Morgan, who is the abbot at our sister monastery in the United Kingdom. It's from the journal in the autumn 1990 issue. I'm just going to read you part of a paragraph. Reverend Master Daishin is talking about chapter 18 of the Lotus Sutra. And the title of the chapter is, translation, is The Merits of Joyful Acceptance. This chapter states that the merit of joyful acceptance is greater than that of providing for the needs of all beings. It is even greater than giving the teaching to enable them to become arhats. This is an extraordinary statement until you realize what joyful acceptance really is. It has always been the teaching of our tradition that the highest good comes from becoming one with the eternal. Working to provide for the needs of all beings is a worthy and meritorious thing. But we need to understand what the needs of living beings really are. Otherwise, in the midst of providing for their physical needs, we can lose sight of the fact that without the true refuge, physical comfort is never enough. Joyful acceptance embraces the acceptance of all that life throws up as the jewels of the pure land. When we can accept whatever we encounter, we are creating merit for all beings. We are converting our own karma. And think about this. We are the only ones with whom our karma has even the slightest little bit of a chance of a serious house cleaning. So we need to get on with it. We may not have much time left. We may have today and the next 30 years, or we may have until this afternoon. That's how the light gets in. That's the last verse of the poem. To do whatever it is we find ourselves doing with respect and with reverence. Whatever we find ourselves doing, let us not let our daily life, whether we be in a monastery or in the world, let us not let our daily life take away from us the opportunities to truly do good. When we start doing everything we have to do with respect and with reverence, it is enough to practice the precepts truly, to meditate, to be mindful, to ask ourselves each day, are we walking the path of the Buddha? Am I walking the way of the Buddha? You know, there's a, I think of it as a vernacular saying, if that's the right word, you need to walk that talk. And we do. We do. It's not enough to meditate and get off our cushion and go our own way. It's not enough to read and study the Dharma and not put it into practice. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And it's often helpful for me when I think that, well, I don't know, am I doing enough? It's sometimes good to remember that practicing the precepts is actually the way we deal with suffering for ourselves and others. And remember, we're a bodhisattva for ourselves. We're a bodhisattva for ourselves. So the light of the Dharma, the joy, is here and now and everywhere, and it's within each of us. And I'm going to just talk briefly about a few things that I found that are joyful and that bring me joy. One is listening, taking the time to truly listen. Because time, after all, is all we have. And there truly is enough of it. I can't tell you how many times in my life I've said, I don't have time for that. But when I really think about it, is it really true that I don't have time for it? Or is it true that I want to do something else? I'm impatient to get on with something else. I don't want to be bothered with this. Thank you very much. So let us listen to what we say to ourselves. And remember that you are the only person in the whole world that can determine what is the important thing in your life. What is the important thing in your life? Willingness brings me joy. Probably because for so many years I've been so contrary. And I don't think I ever lacked in will. But I certainly lacked a lot in willingness. I think that willingness is to see someone else's viewpoint. Willingness to listen to our small complaining self and to say, this is a quote from a talk that Ramester Dyasvi did on spiritual simplicity. If you come across it, it's a wonderful talk. Listen to our small complaining self and say, I don't quite believe you. We don't have to go along with it. We don't have to go along. of what we tell ourselves. Respect. I was raised in the South. There's a lot of politeness there. I came away feeling that there may not be quite what I think of as respect. I lived there in the 50s, actually earlier than that. Respect is a courteous regard for other things, other beings, everybody, a courteous regard for all beings, for all things. I think that means we need to practice all acceptance. We need to think about maybe we don't know it all after all. Maybe someone else knows a little more than I do. Maybe someone else has a right to their opinion, even if it differs from my opinion. Heaven forfend. Reverence. Honoring the Buddha nature in all beings and in all things. Doing our daily work with reverence. It's a wonderful thing to have learned how to make gassho, to bring our palms together in front of us and take a moment when we enter a room, when we meet somebody, because the gassho has many meanings. Each of our fingers together has a separate meaning. And basically for me, making gassho is recognizing the Buddha nature in you, recognizing the Buddha nature in the circumstance that I find myself in. I told myself I was going to limit this to half an hour, and we're almost there, but I'm going to take another few minutes. I've left one more for the very last, because it's the really big one for me, and I think without this, we will never find joy. So the last thing I want to talk about is gratitude, and I truly think that without gratitude, there is no joy. I've also come to believe that gratitude is not a feeling. It's an action. It's a practice. It's a way of life. I know for myself, if I had waited to practice gratitude until I felt it, I probably wouldn't be here today. Certainly wouldn't have learned how to practice gratitude. You know, I'm kind of a hard case when it gets down to it. Reverend Master Jiyu said, constant gratitude is the path to generosity of spirit. I first heard her use that term, generosity of spirit, when I formally took the precepts at Jukai in 1986. And she was on the altar, and she showed her silk to us. And she used the term, generosity of spirit. And I carried that with me in my heart for years and years. And it was only very recently that I came across my private journals, my personal journal from that time, and I had actually written down what she said. And she said, find my little note to myself. The way that she put it is, generosity of spirit comes through training and practice of gratitude. So we can train ourselves to be grateful. I think some of us are very fortunate, and our karma allows us to be grateful and practice gratitude naturally. That hasn't been the case with me. And I'll tell you a very brief little story, and some of the other monks here may remember this. I had the great blessing to be Reverend Master Jiyu's chaplain and nurse when I came. I had been a nurse for 17 years. I worked with elderly, and I worked as an OBGYN nurse with moms and newborns, and I thought, well, I can put that aside when I go to the Abbey. Not going to be any call for that. But Reverend Master Jiyu got very ill, and it was a question of having someone help her or getting someone from outside. So I had the great blessing and a lot of teaching and being her nurse. And one of the things towards the end of her life, that we had to cope with, as you do with someone who is not able to move very much, were bed sores. They're painful. They take a lot of work. They take a lot of time. We could spend an hour or more late at night. And she would put up with all of this and make little jokes to us. It was painful. It was uncomfortable. It's a sterile procedure. All you have to do is drop one thing or make one mistake, and you have to do the whole thing over again. And I can remember one night, we'd gotten off dinner. She said, "Are you done, Lass?" And I said, "Yes, Reverend Master, I'm done." So we went out and we're cleaning up and putting things away as we usually did. And then we would pop our heads into our bedroom and say, "Good night, Reverend Master." I've told this story before. And she said, "Thank you." And I was overcome. I'd worked as a nurse for 17 years, and I'd certainly had patients say thank you to me. But to have my master say this, which with such sincerity of a heart, after being in an uncomfortable position and having all these things done to her, I won't go into the gory details, but it was a little gory. And what she said was, "Thank you." Well, you can say thank you once, but she never failed in the several years that I was with her. She never failed to say thank you to me and to the other monks that helped her. And that just, quote, blew me away. I thought, how can you go through something so uncomfortable and say thank you to someone? Because gratitude was part of her blood and bones. And the point of training, the point of training is to live in harmony with the eternal. I'm going to read, at the risk of being a little longer, read just a very few sentences. That one of the books that I go back to a lot is Volume 1 of Roar of the Tigers. And two of the chapters that I often go back to are The Mind of the Bodhisattva and The Ceremony, what's the title for it? Mind of the Bodhisattva and The Ceremony of Household Life. I would recommend them to you all. She devotes a lengthy section to gratitude, and she quotes from Great Master Dogen's Shishogi. And I'm going to read you just a little bit of that. The scripture in the Shishogi is, "You need no further teachings than the above." He relates a lot of examples. I'm not going to take the time to do those. You need no further teachings in order to show gratitude. And you must show it truly in the only real way in your daily life. Our daily life should be set constantly in selfless activity with no waste of time whatsoever. And Reverend Master Chiyu's comment, from this third position, and that was her phrase for beyond the opposites. You know, there's the position, that's the first one. There's the opposite of that, that's the second one. The third position is in the middle. This means that, and I know it for a fact for myself, once you find this place, this third position, the eternal, the gratitude flows out like a river. A lot of people call it the water of the spirit, or the water of the eternal, or as you see in some statues, Kanzion, pouring the water of compassion out. It's also the water of gratitude. I think that we can always look around and find something to be grateful for. In our everyday life, I poured a glass of water, ran a glass of water out of the faucet before I came over here, and I thought, how many people have to go to great lengths to get water to drink? You know, I used the toilet before I came. How many people would be ecstatic to have a toilet to go to? You know, the outbreak of cholera in Haiti with no clean water to drink, no sanitary facilities. And I'm going to sit here and complain? Come on. So it seems to me that true joy for me is letting go of everything, especially my opinions and desires. And for me, true joy is the practice of gratitude. It's the path to generosity of spirit. Here's a nice little quote from Annie Dillard. How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. And I would add to that, how we live our lives is how we will live our death. And think about that if you like. So I would leave you with this one question. What is it that's truly important for you in your life today?